So I'm very honored to be here, and I thank Jason for getting me involved. It's been a very enjoyable and enlightening workshop so far. I've been interested in natural language for a long time, and I've been thinking about it for a long time, but it hasn't been a core area of mine. When Kevin Gimple and Mohit Bansal came to TTI, it was sort of a chance to try to really get involved and do some real work, and they've been helping me do some experiments. But I'm going to be talking today at really a philosophical level. So I, by nature, I'm an AI person who's very, AI is sort of a philosophical area. I'm a very philosophical person. And I'm going to be thinking about the relationship between reference and semantics. That's really what this talk is all about. Reference semantics, compositional semantics. I'm going to start, I'm also by nature argumentative. So at any point, if anyone wants to argue with me, please do. I thought about converting the word claim here to thesis to be a little less provocative, but I'm going to start with these two claims just to put a stake in the ground and see what happens. I'm going to focus on the idea of structured data, as in the sense of a database, and what's happening in the world these days with respect to structured data. And I'm going to try to make a case that if we could structure unstructured text, so in contrast to structured data, there's unstructured text. Right, there's news articles and so on. We can do queries against structured data. We can do SQL. We understand the semantics of structured data. If we could structure, quote, unstructured data, maybe we could do queries against it. Maybe we'd have a better chance of processing it semantically. So what I'm going to focus on, what does it mean to structure unstructured data? And I'm going to propose a particular model of structuring raw text that I'm going to call entity parsing, and I'm going to argue, and I'm happy to argue. I argue by nature. I'm going to argue that this is plausibly a nearly adequate semantic representation. And this is basically, I'm basically going to take the position that was expressed to some extent by Chris Manning in a panel last summer, where, where he argued that a Stanford dependency parse was, you know, adequate for many semantic processing purposes. I'm going to take basically that position, except I'm going to throw in coreference. But before we do that, let's look at the cutting edge of structured data, right? So what's being done with structured data these days? So, you know, Google Scholar citation databases are structured data. Freebase is an interesting case of structured data because it has such broad coverage. The Google Knowledge Graph, what you sort of see when you do a Google search off on the side with structured information about people. Then there are these other things that Google has been working on. They've tried to agglomerate tables from the web. The whole idea is here to big, you know, to do structured data at a large scale. Any big data proprietary database of personal information. Okay, so I want to, so what is a database? What is structured data? Structured data, database is, people use the phrase entity relation database. So a database has entities and relationships. Now, for me, a key word there is the word entity. I want to think of entities in the sense of databases. What is a database entity? And there's this thing, the Freebase annotation of the ClueWeb corpora that Google released recently. So they're taking web pages, web information, and they're resolving references in the web annotation to Freebase entities. So they're taking this reference, this mention, and they're going to a Freebase entity. So they're putting particular database entities, annotating text with actual database entities. So I want to think about this at a variety of levels, one of which is philosophical. There's all this, okay, so what do we mean by coreference or reference, right? So I want to focus, so everyone here is familiar with the problem of coreference. So in coreference, you think of a text with a bunch of mentions, and you're deriving an equivalence relation on those mentions, right? What mentions refer to the same thing? But we use the phrase coreference. So the idea here is that there's a, in Tarskian semantics, we talk about the value of something, or the referent, the actual thing in the world that is the reference. So I want to intentionally sort of blur these ideas. Now, in this first sentence, now another thing I want to say is I prepared this talk about a month ago for a visit to Amazon. And I wanted, and one principle I have is that whenever I think about natural language, I want to make sure that I'm looking at real data. So I have this habit of going to news.google.com and just always taking the first sentence of the lead article and just seeing what it tells me. Right, so all of these sentences are all going to be taken. These were all sort of active sentences a month ago. And a month ago, there was all these articles about the missing airliner. Now, this is an interesting case because this was a sentence in the news, and this is literally a database ID, right? So this mention is actually naming the database ID. But these other mentions aren't, right? So these are all mentions to the same thing, right? Missing flight. Again, that has the database ID in it, but the Malaysian Airlines plane and it. So I just want you to think about what's the reality? What is flight 370? In semantics, the idea behind semantics is that you map the linguistic structures to real values. This is just another example. The secrecy-shrouded botched execution in Oklahoma on Tuesday couldn't happen the same way in California, where state laws and regulations require public disclosure of drugs used at lethal injections. So I'm just pointing out the mentions and thinking about what they're actually referring to. Here's another one. As pro-Russian forces extended their control over parts of eastern Ukraine, the country's interim authorities ordered the expulsion of a naval attaché at Moscow's embassy in Kiev. Here are some event references. Stiviano says, Donald Sterling's racist comments on the audio recording leaked to the public were not the first by the Los Angeles Clippers owner in conversations with her. Sterling told Stiviano in the recording that she should not post online photos of herself with black people. The recording, which an attorney for Stiviano said was leaked, by a third party, led to a public outcry across the country in the NBA. So there's two references to this leaking event, right? Leaked to the public and was leaked by a third party. Everyone here is familiar with event co-reference. I prepared this talk for a less sophisticated audience, so I'm a little on edge here, but another thing I'd like to do, and as I was sitting in my hotel room this morning, I was looking at this slide in my talk, and the first line in this slide said, I sampled a sentence at 8 o'clock this morning. So I replaced the sentence with the lead sentence of the first article at 8 o'clock this morning. I find this sentence disturbing. I considered deleting the slide. I find this sentence disturbing, but it does have interesting references. The Israeli military, the crisis, a ground incursion. And I'm focusing on references that are difficult to interpret as physical objects. And I'm doing that on purpose because I'm going to talk about various views of semantics, one of which is grounding, which tends to focus on physical objects. So most people in this audience, probably everyone in this audience, is also familiar with compositional semantics. So this is the idea that we parse something, the parsing imposes phrase structure. The idea in compositional semantics is that each phrase has a meaning. The meaning is constructed from the meaning of its parts. And it's very compelling, I think, to say that this has a well-defined meaning. But what I'm going to try to argue, I'm going to try to sort of fly in the face of compositional semantics. Not that compositional semantics doesn't exist, but the question is, what's the dominant paradigm in semantics? So So and the idea is that if you look, so we have these two ways of approaching semantics, right? You can build the meaning of the phrase from the meaning of its parts, or you can say this phrase refers to something in the world as a mention, and the way it goes from the phrase to its value is to solve the reference problem, right? So this NP is referring to something. Government forces is referring to something. A television tower is referring, you know, these are all, if you look at the number of phrases in here who are getting their value through mention, right? It's sort of dominating the semantics of the expression, of the sentence. So the idea is that mention, coreference, is a central phenomenon in semantics. Reference, the eastern town of Kramatorsk, the pro-Russian rebel activity is a mention. Okay, so I'm going to develop this entity parse approach to representing the, or to developing a semantic representation of sentences, expressions. The idea is that we're going to take each syntax node and treat each syntax node as a mention. So an entity parse, in an entity parse, each syntax node is going to be reference resolved to an entity, an equivalence class. Now what I'm going to mean by entity is just an equivalence class of mentions. So I'm thinking sort of philosophically, but when you come to actually build this thing, you're just going to construct some equivalence class of mentions, and now think database, right? An entity in a database is just some database ID. You know, flight M370 or whatever. And that database ID is just an object that exists in the computer. So what, if you're solving a coreference problem, you can just introduce an ID for each coreference class. Those are the entities of your database. We're converting text to structured data. And the structured data we're gonna build is an entity relation database, right? And we're gonna get there by doing coreference. And we're going to associate each node in the syntax tree with one of these entity IDs, right? And that then we're going to get our, and then we're going to have this dependency parse, and each arc in the dependency parse is then going to be a relationship between entities. Now, there's a potential confusion here. I'm using the word entity in the sense of an entity relation database. I'm not distinguishing entity in the sense of person, place, or thing versus event, right? When I say entity, I mean an ID that could be an event. All right, so let's just do an example of what I'm talking about. Authorities in Ukraine said government forces reclaimed a television tower during a secret operation to quell pro-Russian rebel activities in the eastern town of Kramatorsk. And then there's a sentence, second sentence, Interior Minister Arsen Avakov said that a new assault to reclaim the control over the tower began at dawn. And I'm going to take, I think it's clear if you read the intervening sentences that these two mentions are the same, a security operation and a new assault. And now I'm just going to analyze this first sentence. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to build an entity relation database. So I'm going to give names to the entities, right? So we have the tower, the forces, the government forces, Kramatorsk. I'm just going to take that whole phrase as a unit and call it Kramatorsk. The activity. Now the so we have the pro-Russian rebel activity in Kramatorsk. The activity. So the idea is that all of these things that I'm introducing as I analyze this sentence are things that can be referred to elsewhere in the document, that will be referred to elsewhere in the document. The document is going to end up being an entity relation database involving these entities. This activity, God knows what it is, but it gets mentioned. It gets mentioned over and over. We can introduce an ID for it. And we're going to structure this, we're going to, you know, structure the data. We're going to have an entity relation database. So there's the control of Kramatorsk. I'm going to introduce that as an entity. The operation. Now, the operation has been described twice. It's been described as a security operation to quell the activity. right? So this is a relationship, you know, to quell the activity, which is another entity. It's also a new assault to gain the control, right? Where there's this other thing, which is the control. And there's the reclaiming, which is the forces reclaiming the tower during the operation. Okay, so what we've done is we've taken this sentence and we've converted it to sort of smaller, much smaller relationships between entities that can occur multiple times in the discourse. Okay, so my claim to be controversial at the beginning, yeah, Jason. It is possible that they co-refer.
So are there nodes in your...
In this analysis, I did not make them co-referential.
And is that because you're... Are there nodes at all? They don't seem to be. Is that just because you're suppressing some structure?
No, so when I... These colons here are indicating the introduction of entities in my sense. So when I say the activity here, I'm intending this to be a node.
Right, the nodes presumably... So we seem to have an event, namely a security operation, which contained another event, namely quelling the activity.
I think of this as a relation, right? So I have a security operation whose objective is to quell the activity.
Which is potentially also available for co-reference, even though in this representation.
It's available for co-reference, right.
Right?
All of these things that were introduced by colons are available for co-reference. Okay, so now I'm sort of arguing that this is a different way. It's not like compositional semantics is irrelevant here because, you know, these descriptions, this description clearly has compositional content, right? A security operation to quell the activity, that the meaning of that description of this operation clearly has compositional content. So I'm not arguing the compositional content's not there. I'm just wondering about the dominant way we think about, when you think about composition, when you think about semantics, when you think about Tarskian semantics, let me go to my next slide. Yeah. Right. Like an entity ID. Right. Events can be described in many ways.
So I guess the two events are appropriate. Each one carries an agent. So that am I informed that the agents are co-referential?
They may or may not be. I see what you're asking. Should it be an inference rule? So one thing I should say is that this whole framework is not worked out in incredible detail. But you're suggesting that it should be an inference rule that if I have two descriptions of the same event, both of which have agents, that you might want those agents to be the same. I can imagine cases where that wouldn't be true, but... But it's been passivized, right? Yes. No. That's just the relationship. That's just saying that the head of the mention was government forces.
So anything in these brackets
inside, on this side, things in brackets are entities. The entity ID names ends at the colon there. All right, so let's talk about different views of semantics. So I just showed you an entity parse that yields this structured representation of the sentence. Let's think about compositional Tarski and semantics. This is my universe in another life, formal programming language semantics. All of the compositional Tarski and semantics, typological semantics, truth condition semantics, formal language semantics, these are all essentially, I'm lumping them together as essentially the same idea. There's some value function that takes an expression, think programming languages. You know, there's a value function that takes an expression and gives you back a value for the expression. And it's recursive. That's what we mean by compositional. It's going to construct the value of an expression by constructing values for the sub-expressions. Standard kind of value function in programming languages. My next slide is on that, so I'll just continue through this list. Something that's popular in AI is, or even computer vision, is grounding. I'm an anti-grounding person, and this is an anti-grounding talk. I've had many dinner conversations where I attack grounding and people around the dinner table, fight back. So I'm going to attack grounding. I'll say more my read on what grounding is. A very popular current thing to talk about when you talk about semantics is vector semantics. So I'm also going to say a few words about vector semantics, the idea that the meaning of something is a vector. So let's start with compositional semantics. So my fundamental issue with compositional semantics for natural language as opposed to a programming language is that it's sort of ignoring the reference phenomenon that seems to be, when you sample sentences from the newspaper, this reference phenomenon seems to be the dominant phenomenon in assigning meanings to phrases. Ohio's ban on same-sex marriage, I did not cherry pick this sentence, right? This sentence was sampled from the news, but it has an extremely interesting non-compositional phenomenon. Ohio's ban on same-sex marriage was challenged in federal court by 6 gay couples who seek to make the state join 21 others that have legalized such unions. Okay, what does this phrase mean? To make the state join 21 others that have legalized such unions. Now, the head word of this phrase is join. But I would argue that it's intuitively clear, people rapidly reach the conclusion that what the 6 gay couples seek to do, what I could equally describe this seeking event as to make the state legalize same-sex marriage. Right, so I would argue that this whole phrase, even though it looks very compositional, is not really a joining event, it's a legalization event. And you're going to get that through by the same kind of methods that you do other co-ref. Right? It's heuristic, it's probabilistic, it's dirty, right? It involves lots of features and machine learning and classification. Martha, you've been frowning the whole time. It just doesn't feel like what is actually intended. It feels like a mechanism. It's a mechanism for introducing the additional information that 21 other states have legalized such unions.
But in order for a state to legalize the unions, there has to be this whole legislative process.
But it's not a joining process.
If
you look up a join frame, right, it's going to say there's something, there's a like a club, joining a club, right?
That's
joining a set.
That's right? One sense of join, but another
sense of join is to join a those are metaphorically connected. That's joining a group.
I would argue there's multiple senses of joining. You join someone for dinner.
Yeah.
Join
yeah, but that's different from legalize.
Yeah,
Legalize is fundamentally different, right?
Well, there's activities, there are all activities.
But what the gay couples want is legalization.
Well, it just so happens to be the withdrawal clause that acts what information the states is essentially meaning here. Join these states. Let's join these states.
Yeah, but that's, you think the gay couples would describe it that way?
Yeah, but David Collins is really part of this.
So you just use the phrase in another context. So the reference problem is highly contextual. Right? It depends on what entities are available in the article. Right? So you can get all kinds of ways in which the intended referent of a phrase is all kinds of things. Right? But so what I'm arguing is that the phenomenon of finding the intended referent is more like a co-reference phenomenon than like a compositional. Yes. Yeah, it's a mechanism. I would argue it's a mechanism for introducing this fact that 21 other states, right?
Okay, so you say you want to treat it like a library.
Yep.
Or even possibly an exceptional
a
start with legalizing marijuana. Okay. And so
but suppose this was a database and I asked what do the gay couples seek to make happen? That's my question. What's an appropriate answer to that? Right.
But I'm just saying that there is, I mean, we have ways of recognizing light verbs or asexual verbs that are really just handmaidens to the more important activity.
Okay, would you argue that Ohio's ban on same-sex marriage is, I mean, that feels very referential. I mean, there are other, I picked this one, I agree this, you know, we can argue about whether this is a mention. But there, it's, it should be, it seems clear to me that there are many things that are mentions, and the question is, so mention resolution is a real phenomenon in language, and it applies at lots of places, lots of phrases. So the question is, you know, whether that this is the right analysis or not of that join, I would argue that there is a way to think about getting a referent for that join that's more like a co-reference, that's more like a mention than like a compositional construction. Well, I said that too, that I believe that there is the compositional semantics. There is a compositional meaning of that join expression that's relevant in resolving the mention. So the question, I guess the question I would ask is it plausible, is it a conceivable analysis of this that I would take this phrase to be co-referential with some other phrase that said legalize same-sex marriage? What's being sought is not phrased as legalize same-sex marriage. So I'm saying, suppose there was another sentence in this document that used the phrase legalized same-sex marriage. Would it be a reasonable thing to do to take this phrase as an entity? Because I'm going to put an entity in all my phrases. Yeah. And constructing entities and taking the phrases to refer to the entities across the document.
And I understand the sense in which you think of such Yeah. When you say the state and 21 others, you haven't marked any relation there between those things. And they're not co-referent, but there is an implicit relation there, which is where others means other states. Both of these are like set membership. I don't want to exactly say that because I'm not sure I can stand by that for very well. So is there anything else that's come to your mind? You've looked at many more examples like
well,
this.
One thing that happens all the time is that it's not obvious. One can argue on both sides with respect to a particular merger of objects, whether it's really the same entity or not. Whether it's really
no.
Yeah. So my thoughts are that these things are gray, and the question is if you're Google and you want to build a question answering system, and you want to be able to answer queries against today's news. You want to treat the news as a structured object, and you're going to get scored on, you know, some person's judgment of how good these answers are, then you're going to want to train a system that makes this judgment call in a way that optimizes your score. And so if, in terms of question answering, I think, you know, I would be better off replacing such unions with legalized, with same-sex marriage in answering the question. Okay, how are we doing on, we're doing well. Should we talk about grounding? Hopefully there are people in this audience who are. okay, this is a quote from Ray Mooney. Ray Mooney's a big fan of grounding, visual grounding. And I pulled this off, I had a screaming match with Ray last summer. He likes the scream too, so it, to truly understand an intellectual, to truly understand language, an intelligent system must be able to connect words, phrases, and sentences to its perception of objects and events in the world. And that's my emphasis added to its perception of. Just read this sentence without that phrase for a moment, right? To truly understand language, an intelligent system must be able to connect words, phrases, and sentences to the objects and events of the world. I'm going to agree with that statement. The question is, what are the objects and events of the world? Right? So this is and what I'm going to argue is if you sample news and you look at the mentions and you ask, what do they refer to? They're very rarely physical anything. So the thing that I object to is not that language has to be related to reality. Semantics is the relationship between language and reality, whatever reality is. And I want not to be afraid of that word. The question is, what is reality? Let's take an example sentence. This is, you know, I sort of sampled this sentence. Again, it's not cherry-picked. This is a random sample. Hiring surprisingly surged last month as the economy added 288,000 net jobs, the best performance in more than 2 years, and the unemployment rate dropped to 6.3%, its lowest level since September 2008, the Labor Department said Friday. Okay, what's the Labor Department? What is a job? What is an employer? The idea is that these concepts, these entities, are not ground, they're not defined in terms of the position of material in space. When people talk about, when I use the word reality, most people immediately map the word reality to the position of material in space. They think physics, they think the world is determined by physics, they think reality is, in some sense, reality is the position of material in space. You include all the positions of our atoms and our brains and so on. But the point is that the entities that the language talks about are not, and the concepts are not defined in terms of position of material in space. I'm married to my wife, I own a car, I have so much money, I have an employer. I think if you, you know, recorded, if you actually sampled as opposed to cherry-picked statements at the coffee pot in the morning, you would find most of those references also were non-physical. My son got into Cornell. You know, he got a B in his something or other class. Now you can say, well, these are things we could write on a piece of paper. A piece of paper is physical. Our brains are physical, right? So in some sense, everything, the philosopher might say, supervenes on physics. But to say it's physical because I wrote it on a paper, I have a paper contract, feels to me to be missing the point. So I would like to argue that reality itself is some kind of socially synthesized entity relation database. There are all these facts that are real facts. I really am married to my wife, right? But that has to do with what documents exist, social conventions. You can have preliterate cultures where you can really be married to your wife because everyone says you're, I mean, it's true, right? But it's not about the position of material in space. Anybody willing to, yeah. It does not mean no words. So there are two points, right? One is that if I sample sentences, the dominant phenomenon is non-physical meanings. All I can say is that I would predict that if you did a careful study. Well, just anecdotally, you know, this, I hate this sentence. But this was the lead sentence, this was the lead sentence this morning, right? So this is a random sample. The Israeli military, the crisis, a ground incursion.
Seems pretty grounded to me.
Which word?
Well,
I admit there are some physical.
Entities. I count up the entities and I'm gonna find more grounded than ungrounded.
Yeah, I think this sentence is unusually grounded. That's my experience. When I looked at that, I thought, that's unusually grounded. If you look at these other sentences, they're less grounded. A secrecy-shrouded botched execution in Oklahoma on Tuesday could not happen the same way in California, where state laws and regulations require public disclosure of drugs used in lethal injections. That's
the thing we're opposing was to truly understand language. So would you say that you could take out the grounded bit of language and still truly understand language?
Yes.
So if you were trying to teach a robot natural language, you could avoid engineer location of objects, space, and time.
Well, certainly you'd want it to be able to use that language. Right? You'd want it to be able to talk about locations of objects in space and time. My position is actually that my intuition, again, this is just intuition, is that what's actually happening is a reversal of the two. We understand, our ability to understand the physical world comes from a symbolic level of representation of the physical world. And database kind of inference mechanisms are actually what we use to understand things in general, including the physical world. That's just my take.
So, I mean, through the first language acquisition, a lot of that is going on when you're talking about objects that you're looking at a shared visual, joint visual perception. And that's, you know, all kids learn those words first, like car, as you mentioned. Why would that happen? How come children
learn? I agree with that. So I agree that learning happens that way. That you know, I realize that pre-linguistically, you know, I'm going to realize that this is an object, and I'm going to, you know, perhaps have a token for it. So it's natural to tie language to it. But on the other hand, it's also possible, I believe, and Google is doing a good job of showing what is possible from raw text, to mine an enormous amount of text and look at the words in those texts and find, I mean, this is my, okay, so I'm just speculating, but find implicatures that allow one to answer questions. Like if I put this on the table, you know, is it on the table? And there are lots of questions you're gonna be able to answer without ever going to CAD-CAM models of physical systems.
That doesn't mean
Well, it means I can be a competent linguistic agent without being embodied. Without being embodied.
It doesn't seem that it's really critical that there are expressions which refer to ground identities. I think, why do you need to hold on to that? I mean, what's the beef with...
No, I'm not...
He's taking a strong view. That's to say, come on. You want to emphasize that there are going to be things which do not have physical extensions.
Yeah.
Then there is social construction.
Right.
There are, you know, people who create
right.
these artificially intentional or whatever objects.
Right.
You could refer to the reason.
Right. No, that's fair. That's fair. So I'm not saying, I mean, clearly there are physical words, but the question is, how do we think about the semantics of natural language? And if we want to, if we want to have a sort of general understanding of what the semantics of natural language, how the semantics of natural language works, it's going to have to cover both.
Darcy, and then.
The secrecy shrouded box desiccation. But you can point to mentions, right? I can say there's a mention of a job, and I can construct a database that's converted that mention to a database entity, right? And now I can point to a job. I can say my job at, you know, I have a job. My job at TTIC. No. I personally think it's through language, right? You're exposed to uses of the word. You're exposed to implicatures involving the word. You come to understand the consequences of having a job. You know, what the process by which you get jobs. I mean, maybe. Clearly, you know, small children do learn. I mean, I'm not going to argue with learning that this is an entity and refer, you know, the meaning of the word cup through exposure to cups. But again, I guess what I want to say is that I feel like if I want a theory of language acquisition that's broad enough to cover all of this stuff, that theory of language acquisition can't be simply physical ground. In the domain of economic discourse. But I'm not sure I think that there's no one who covers all areas of discourse, right? So you can't say that because a person can't talk about topological manifold, they're not a competent speaker of English. Yeah, but I'm not asking for that. Sample from news, yes.
Yeah, so I would expect these to not be representative even use text in general because they are supposed to be abstract under the events described in detail from the SOG article. So, do you think that they represent?
Well, they're clearly biased. The news is a biased source of sentences. It's just a matter of convenience. It's a way I have of sampling sentences. That's convenient. So there's clearly biased, and they're probably more abstract than morning coffee pot conversations. But I would still, and somebody could, it'd be nice to do the experiment. I would still conjecture that morning coffee pot conversations are highly non-physical. Oh, I see what you're saying. That could be true. That could be true. Martha.
So let's say the article went up 6 months late. A lot of jobs are moving from the factory floor to the IT sector.
Good.
Do you think someone could be a competent speaker trying to make that sense without also understanding that these are something like this?
Yes. I think you can define the move frame in the sense of a frame at an I moved from logic to learning. If you phrase it right, you get all the metaphorical extensions and as implicatures. And now I'm really going out on a limb. If you phrase it right, it's designed to be used metaphorically. And the concept. There's no such animal. I mean there is look at the C++ standard library. It's full of container classes. Do I need to understand the physical notion of container classes to write C++ code? Are those concepts well defined?
That's so far from what we're talking about.
I don't find it to be. I find it, clearly there's an understanding of those concepts. It is part of our, those concepts are part of our language. And my claim is that the notion of move has a very abstract meaning that you could put down in a frame. I think I'm almost done.
Yeah, okay. So we can continue discussion after that.
Oh, actually, I wasn't almost done, but the rest is not important. this was more fun. I'm glad we did this.
A few words about vector statics, actually, I think would be interesting for a number of people in the audience, including students who have spent some time studying.
Yeah, so vector semantics are great. Words should be associated with vectors. I'm a big believer in deep neural networks, and we're experiencing a revolution in many fields due to deep neural networks. My issue with vector semantics is that if you take it too far, if you start to say that a whole sentence is a vector, which to me takes it too far, you lose the entity relation nature of, you lose the structured data nature of sentences. And I think the entity relation nature of sentences is key to the semantics of sentences. You need the entities, you need the relationships between the entities, and you don't want to take it too far. So I think of the vectors as providing very good, like they're probably very good at shades of meaning. You know, you have words that are nearly synonymous but have different shades of meaning. My intuition is we're going to get a lot of we're going to be able to account for a lot of that by associating vectors with words. But we're losing the entity relation nature of language. So the rest is a formalism that I've been playing with Kevin and Mohit that I'll skip over. We've started to do some experiments, but we're beginners in the co-ref. Another way of interpreting what I'm saying is that I love co-ref as one of the problems of NLP, right? I'm tracking the co-ref research. And this slide has some embarrassing statement about I'm an irrepressible AI optimist. So I feel like, you know, I'm always optimistic. I feel like we might be on the verge of a big deal here.
Well, remarkably, we have a few minutes for questions.
So I said, I think at some point I said, you know, reality is an entity relation database, socially constructed. That glosses over what the phrase entity relation database, what I mean by that phrase. Clearly, I'm using it in a very not fleshed out way. So clearly there are lots of, I'm old enough to have lived with the old logicist AI schools, right? So there are lots of things you can say in logic that should be part of an entity relation database, including, you know, complicated things that you're referring to. It's not a competent speaker, let's put it that way.
It's not a competent speaker.
Right.
Okay. But it understands the, you know, various types of intelligence and things like that. You know,
well, to me, the word understand, I sort of take it synonymous with competent speaker. In other words, it can manipulate the language in a way that demonstrates that it understands the consequences of what's being said. And a big problem with formal proofs, maybe you're... That's true. The theorem prover is so poor at understanding the consequences of the statements. Yeah, certainly I believe that pure mathematical competence is possible.
Okay, right.
Right.
So there's a really interesting paper from, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, a guy named Lockhart, you've probably seen it, it's called Lockhart's Lament, about the teaching of mathematics. And he has a statement that sounds a lot like Searle in the Chinese Room. He says that students you know, push symbols around. It's not only that they don't understand what the teacher is meaning by it, they understand they themselves.
If you take it to the level of arithmetic, addition,
yeah.
Right, it's very clear that you can teach the algorithms of addition without teaching what the numbers mean.
Right. One way to teach better how the numbers mean, according to educators, is to use physical manipulators. So that was the gotcha that I was working up to. You know, everybody swears by, you know,
I mean, yes, that's true, but just let me, I don't know if this would be compelling or not, but there is a semantics for addition, right? It's the cardinality of a disjoint union. And so you can say that, and you know, I can state that at a completely abstract level. And you know, a theorem prover could come to understand the semantics of the numbers and the cardinality of a disjoint union without ever holding objects.
So a possible compromise is that for adult confidence, or if you don't have to learn because you were programmed directly with the statements about mathematics, then it is not necessary to have any brother. But it might be very helpful with a way to bootstrap by way of something another way.
Yeah, I certainly human learning is, you know, grounding is a real phenomenon in human learning. I'm not going to argue with that.
Other questions?